You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are ready for an episode with no filler today.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird.
So, Jonah, I know we're very excited for our guest today, and when we were kids, you went to one of his concerts and got me a pretty awesome piece of merch. Do you remember that?
I do. This is the only time you've ever asked me for a t-shirt from a concert I went to. This was in high school. And I believe this was Brian's first, maybe one of his first tours with Bad Religion. This was on the Gray Race tour.
Yes.
It was at the Agora in Cleveland. I want to say maybe 96-ish. Unwritten Law opened up. Ringing any bells?
This rings all kinds of bells. Yes, I do. I know the Agora well, and that makes sense. You should have said hi. I would have given you a discount.
I would have been
a family deal.
Yeah, I would have been way too nervous to say. I still actually feel very nervous talking to you, Brian. But Vanessa was like a fan of the record and the Gray Race, and I got her a shirt. I believe it was a Ringer shirt, which were big in that.
Yes, it was a blue. I don't know if you remember these, Brian. It was a blue Ringer shirt that said Bad Religion in yellow letters, and then there were like yellow around the edge of the sleeves.
Right, I do. And that was the one without the crossbuster on it. So for people who aren't really going to make that jump to that sort of anti-Christian icon, they had a way
around it.
And that's full service. That's what we were about then in 96.
Yeah.
I really made the jump to the crossbuster because I had the whole tapestry with it in my bedroom.
Thank you. So hardcore.
I was all in.
We love you all.
Right.
Really.
We were both representing in different ways. Yeah. But I remember I got quite a few compliments on the shirt and felt very cool in it.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I think I might have one in dead stock up in the attic somewhere. So,
whoa.
Yeah, I do.
I wonder if I still have mine. Mm. If not, I'll probably just give you a little text after the show.
Yeah. I'll see what I can do.
Possibly. Yeah. Should we?
Well, yeah, let's go ahead and introduce today's guest. If you haven't figured it out, you know, Brian is a guitar player in Bad Religion. He was one of the founding members of Minor Threat. His other projects include basically every notable punk and hardcore band, Dag Nasty, Government Issue, The Meatmen, Junkyard, and of course, more recently, Beach Rats and Fake Names. Let's give it up for Brian Baker. I probably missed some stuff there, but
yeah, there's others, but no, you touched on the highlights. And I love this in this interesting journey. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Ringer shirts, like that was the era where like I was wearing a lot of JNCOs, wallet chains, Ringers. Did you get into that kind of fashion during that time?
I mean, I liked a Ringer just, you know, when I'm thinking about a Ringer shirt, I was like, that's what Brian Wilson wore in the Beach Boys, you know?
Right.
So it was always a classic look for me, but I was in a very experimental phase in the mid 90s with Bad Religion. Cause I had, I'd come out of a hard rock band. And so when I joined the band, I had like shoulder length bleached hair. And then within about 6 months, I have this blue spiky hair, and I'm just reestablishing my punkness. But yet I'm 30 right now. It was confusing, but very exhilarating at the time.
Yeah. Where did you kind of feel more comfortable? I'd imagine, you know, you came from that obviously Minor Threat and that Discord scene to do. What was it like when you were in Junkyard? What was that aesthetic like for you?
It wasn't really that different from later Dag Nasty. And the people in Junkyard were all from punk bands. So we had a guy from the Big Boys and a couple of guys from a band called Decry in California who are, an early LA punk band. So it was just a little bit more debaucherous, and it was dumber than punk, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a great time. I mean, that's, you know, I was playing guitar.
Sure, sure. I associate with Vanessa, and I don't know if you remember this. When I was growing up, I had this set of these like glam metal trading cards.
Guilty.
Yeah, I can't remember what they were called, but it had all the bands of that era, and you could collect different members. And I'm pretty sure the members of Junkyard were in this next to like Skid Row and whoever else.
Not only are you sure, but they were called rock cards in keeping with the big brains here.
Whoa, yes.
Rock cards. And Junkyard was included in this collection of rock cards. And fortunately for me, maybe 15 years ago, I found a brick of Junkyard specific rock cards on eBay. And I paid maybe $10 or $15 for 1,000 cards. And so I've been using them for Christmas presents for friends and family ever since. And
oh my gosh!
Yeah, I have three. There are three different scenes that I'm featured in the card. So if you are a collector, collect all three. Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool that you had your own cards. I remember, Jonah, you had those cards. I think around that time I had a lot of 90210 cards where you could get a card with each member of the cast of 90210. Mm. So those were not as cool, I would say.
I don't know. It depends.
In retrospect, and probably not as valuable. Although,
maybe you and Brian could get a trade going card or something.
Yeah. Yeah. NKOTB cards had a few of those too.
I'm glad you were a carder. You're a big carder. That's good to know.
Right. I'm curious, like when you were a kid, obviously, like you famously kind of started Minor Threat or joined Minor Threat when you were 15 or helped start it. And like, what were you kind of like as a kid? Because obviously you were a very talented musician. Were you like practicing all the time, or were you in DC, or how did that kind of come together?
Well, you're being very charitable. I was, I could play an instrument, but I was an only child. And so that was really what informed my playing. It was just something to do. And I read a lot, and my parents didn't like each other. And, you know, it was in a solitary existence. I didn't want to characterize it in a modern sense because, you know, there's pitfalls there, but it was fun. I liked making my own fun and being by myself. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these, you know, trappings of that era, like I was a big cartoon person and a snack person and, stuff you do in the house by yourself. And then there was a guitar too. I mean, that's really how I look at it. I wasn't trying to be a musician. It was just, you know, there was the guitar.
And what cartoons and snacks were you kind of checking out at that time?
I was I loved cars. So I was a big Speed Racer guy, which I don't know if everyone's familiar with that. It was a Japanese, basically Japanese manga that there was an anime of this family that had a race team. And, I didn't know it was Japanese. It was just weird for now. What is obviously why now I know. So that was a car one that I was into. And there was a cartoon called Wacky Races that I used to watch too, that was, I think it came out in the very late 60s and I was watching it. I was born in 65. So, you know, every episode was a race of these like 30 teams made of different, you know, different stereotypes basically. But at the time it was like, here's the Undertaker and he's driving a tombstone. You know, here are the cavemen. They're driving a rock.
So you're going specifically for car race related
content. I was just
content.
I loved the cars. It was a thing. There was a cartoon called Speed Buggy, which was like the poor man's Scooby-Doo. And it almost was Scooby-Doo, except for that they drove around in a buggy that could talk. And then they solved mysteries with the help of the buggy that they were in. It was also,
gotcha.
You know,
yeah,
they sentient. Yeah, it was great.
That's so cool. I was so into cars as a kid too. Vanessa, I don't know if you remember this, but our mom said that I would just sit behind the wheel of the parked car and just imagine driving for like hours as a kid.
That's so cute. I didn't know that.
I'm guilty of that myself. I did exactly that.
really?
Yeah. It's weird because when I quickly, I'd like to just say that my dad was wonderful to me. But when you hear this, it's insane. One of my best memories is we used to go and share a house on Long Island with another family when I was 8, 9 years old. This would be our summer vacation. We'd go for a week. And there was, this was like in East Hampton, basically. And there was a gas station on Montauk Highway, where there would be, every season, there would be like 5 or 6 wrecked cars that were lined up on the side of the gas station. And I don't know how this worked out, but my father, Bobby, obviously had a relationship with a person at the gas station because he would leave me at the gas station to go do whatever dads do in the wrecked cars. And we called it the crashed car place. And I'm sure it was probably only for like 45 minutes or an hour that he would leave me with a man at a gas station to crawl around broken glass and sit behind the wheel of these whatever these cars were. And I just loved it. And it was, you know, it was not at all abusive, and I did make it through. No tetanus. But it's just so wild to think about that now, you know. Liability being what it is. And one of the cars, and I will never forget this, was a Mercedes 190 SL, which is a beautiful two-door convertible Mercedes they made in the late 50s, the early 60s. Just iconic cars. And now one would be worth, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this wrecked Mercedes was there every season because we must have gone 3 or 4 years in a row. And the other cars would change, but the 190 would stay. Big white steering wheel. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Wow. And incredible that you would be in a band called Junkyard later when you were kind of hanging out at like a junkyard.
Yeah, but then that's where I gained a lot of the experience that I used in Junkyard, being so familiar with the ins and outs.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. I still smell the car. It's crazy. There's like a total sense memory.
That's crazy. Yeah. Now, I want to ask, as someone who watched a lot of Heathcliff growing up, what would you say that's a pretty accurate representation of a junkyard? Did you ever watch it?
No, I never watched Heathcliff. I'm so sorry.
It's a bunch of cats and other animals hanging out.
The cat who eats garbage, I think, basically.
I don't think the cat eats garbage.
We had Top Cat, which I think predates Heathcliff, which was a number of cats who did, I think that they were alley cats and maybe trash cats. It was kind of like a feline Fat Albert.
Okay.
In a way, it's hard. It's an ensemble cast.
Interesting. I feel like I kind of am.
Yeah, Top Cat.
Remembering this a little.
A lot of Brooklyn accents.
Okay.
Meow.
That's cool. Now, this feels sort of like taking a step back from what you just said in terms of cars. But the other thing that Jonah would do is Jonah would buy a lot of posters of cars and have them up in his room. And there's one poster in particular that he bought at the Scholastic book sale at school, and he wouldn't take it out of the plastic because he wanted it to protect
it. Was a Testarossa, so you got it.
I was just going to say the Lamborghini.
Yeah, it was either a Lamborghini Countach or a Ferrari Testarossa. Those are kind of the two.
Yeah,
two.
Well, red or
cars,
yellow.
Right?
Which color was it? That'll tell you.
Red.
It was the Ferrari.
Yeah, red or yellow.
It was red.
Yeah,
it was
Ferrari.
Red
for the
yeah.
Ferrari. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yes. Did you have any posters in your room growing up that you were too scared to take out of the shrink wrap?
No, I did not.
Okay. You sound cooler than me.
No, that's not. I just didn't. I wasn't that precious with my stuff. I was. You know,
yeah,
remember,
I understand.
I went punk, remember?
Right.
Junkyard.
Yeah.
Well, so did you, Jonah, but you just really wanted to protect the value of your
I wanted to protect the value of those posters.
In case you wanted to resell it one day. Very smart.
Sure, sure. Brian, was it, and maybe this is just kind of like a scenario I've made up in my head, like you as a kid would wake up and then go to Haagen-Dazs and see Ian and Henry Rollins getting ice cream. Was that kind of like a typical day for you or not really?
Jonah,
there were
like
days like that. Yeah. We would definitely the thing is that our, ground zero for punk when I was 15 was Georgetown in Washington, D.C., which is just really kind of an upscale, older part of the city. You know, a lot of the buildings were, late 18th century. And our Haagen-Dazs was actually like, the Haagen-Dazs was in a row house. It's very, very, very twee.
Cool.
And still have this, the streetcar tracks and so it was really kind of a fun juxtaposition that these private school punks were wandering the mean streets of Georgetown and stopping at Haagen-Dazs to say hello to their friends. But we also went to a Roy Rogers. There was a Roy Rogers restaurant a few blocks down, and that was a big hangout. The drummer for Iron Cross was basically found a. He was obsessed with getting, I think they would give you free buns and then he would use the Fixin's bar and create his own punk sandwich at no charge. He went on to own the Black Cat nightclub.
Nice.
So that shows you he was smart with his money. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's very exciting. United Nations, we played our first show ever at the Black Cat.
Wow.
Yeah. Obama's inauguration date in 2008. Yeah.
Black Cat's awesome. Still there. And red.
So, wow.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So you're hanging out at Roy Rogers, Haagen-Dazs. Like, what were some? Were you skateboarding? Like, what were some other stuff you were kind of doing?
Yeah. I mean, I was skateboarding long before I was punk, and I think, but punk kind of took over in every way. Like, I mean, for starters, the boots.
Yeah.
That kind of slowed down your skate,
sure.
And I think that I think I was more preoccupied with walking long distances to no specific place, looking kind of sullen and, checking my,
Could you talk us through the whole look that you're rocking here? Like the boots, I assume, are like big kind of combat-y boots.
Yeah. Well, they're combat-y boots. When I first went in, my mother was very, very, my parents were separated at that point, and my mother was very helpful. And she was also kind of cool. She looked a little like David Bowie, and she dressed like Bowie a little bit. And so my first punk outfit was that I used her red hair dye.
Okay.
And had kind of this spiky red hair that we had kind of cut on our own. And I was wearing, some like skinny jeans that had zippers up the back, but they were fashion for, ladies' skinny jeans.
Right.
But they worked somehow.
Yeah, Joni used to wear my jeans a lot too. There's something about being a skinny.
I don't know. Yeah, once in a while, not a lot, but
yeah. And there would be the big combat boots that we all got from Sunny Surplus, which was the surplus store in Georgetown, which is convenient that we could stock up there. I had a Jam T-shirt. Was the first T-shirt that I bought. Like a commercial punk shirt, it said the Jam, but a lot of it was just thrift store stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'd have a white shirt and then you'd write something on it. Maybe like with paint. I don't even think it was a Sharpie. I think it was just poster paint.
Okay.
A band name or how you're feeling, or what's wrong.
Right.
Yeah. And, I had a leather jacket, but you kind of went from leather jacket to sort of or just tattered 20-year-old black suit coat.
Okay.
Right.
That was a big one too.
Yeah.
Big too.
Yeah.
How many, cuz Brian, you have like very cool style but you wear a lot of band shirts. Obviously, I have a lot of band shirts. My wife is sort of trying to get me to pare down the band shirts. It's kind of an ongoing thing. Do you ever get rid of them? How many do you think you have? Do you ever wear just like a black shirt or a shirt with a stripe or something?
Well, it's funny is that in my real life, I don't wear a lot of band shirts. You see pictures of me playing.
Right.
And I do like to represent when I play.
Oh, that's
sure.
Nice.
Like I'll always wear a yeah, I'll wear a Discharge shirt. Or I went through a phase where I would wear bands that I was in before Bad Religion, or, you know, like my other band shirts on stage with Bad Religion, because I thought that was being, you know, a little wink and a nod. But in retrospect, I might have sent the wrong signals. You know, I think paring it down to the real quality is important. I mean, you don't have to completely, you know, walk off that path.
Right. Yeah.
And Jonah, yeah. You can always yeah. send me your shirts, because I think we're kind of the same size, because you're a pretty slender guy. And I always love wearing your band shirts. And sometimes I will admit I wear them as kind of a poser, because I'm not as familiar with the band as you are, but, you know, in the interest.
Yeah, I've heard it's not cool to be quizzed about what you're wearing anymore.
Yeah,
so
I think you're
safe.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, that's probably true.
Right.
Because I feel
you're not supposed to do that.
That used to happen a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, really? All right.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
When did you see them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's your favorite song of theirs?
What's the drummer's mom's name? Right. Exactly. Stephanie. To answer your question, Joan, I've probably got a couple hundred of these things from, you know, various years. And I haven't really done anything with them. I have this grand plan that eventually I'm going to have, you know, I'll have some amazing, you know, tag sale, and then I'll donate it to an animal shelter or make some big deal out of it. But now it's just in, you know, storage container land.
Right.
I check in once every maybe 2 years when I'm trying to, where was that? Where's that flag shirt?
Yeah.
I know that still fits.
Yeah. Mm. What's it like for you, like, listening to these? Because I was in a band, you know, bands as like a teenager, you know, 14, 15, 16 year old. They weren't the best bands. There's like recordings don't exist of them. No one would want to hear them.
Oh, no.
Obviously, you were in Minor Threat, which is a band that's still obviously very sub. What's it like listening to like 15 year old Brian playing music as an adult? Because most people don't ever hear that stuff again.
Right.
It's weird. It's, right now, it's just gratitude. It's like, wow, what a, you know, how nice is that, that this is here to listen to, for starters. And the whole idea of right place, right time, and, you know, being this disaffected teenager and going to the same high school as some other people who felt the same way. And we formed this band because that's what we did. There was no expectation. There was no, you know, you weren't trying to do anything other than this was an after school activity, basically. And so listening to it, you know, I'm proud of it. I'm very grateful. And, you know, some of it's not really great, but that's, you know, that's at least there's a document of it. So, and this was at a time when people didn't, you know, record every single thing that they did.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then shared it with everybody in the world.
Yeah.
So it's nice that stuff exists.
Yeah. When you were 15, do you remember what your band like practices were like were you, because when I was 15 I would have been like, let's get some fruit roll-ups and, like, you know, anyway, you know, that's probably not what it was like, but.
No, well, you know what, the advantage for me is that I was the youngest guy in the band by a couple of years, and so when I was 15 in Minor Threat, when we first started, Ian and Jeff were 18.
Okay.
They were out of high school, and they were, you know, it was really Ian's vision, and he was really motivated to do this band and to get these songs out. And so I was kind of lucky to be in that tailwind. So we didn't really, we took practicing pretty seriously.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a hangout. We wanted to be, good.
Yeah.
And all of our other friends around town were all doing the same thing. Everyone was going, you know, between 4 and 7, you don't hear, you know, no one's on the street because they're all rehearsing in their parents' basements, you know. So we kind of did take it seriously. It wasn't, the messing around was like, the shows was different.
Yeah.
That was, you know, that's the social event where you're goofing around and hanging out. And where's the bass player? Oh, he went to get pizza. Okay. Well, you're, you know, next up.
Right. I mean, right.
No one cared. Nobody cared.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, Vanessa, Minor Threat weren't sitting around eating fruit roll-ups.
I apologize if that was a
fun.
I was just thinking about purely about the age, your age at that time, and not about the product you're creating.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, if we'd all been my age, there would have been no products. Yeah. Been a lot of fruit roll-ups and, you know, ding-dongs.
Right, right, right.
And fruit pies.
Save that thought, Brian, because we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back with your topic.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back with Brian Baker. So, Brian, you gave us an incredible segue. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Sure.
We were going to talk about snacks today. And we wanted to start with Stouffer's Frozen Dinners because Stouffer's headquarters, I don't know if you knew this, is in Cleveland. And we would drive past it all the time in Solon, Ohio.
Yes.
Did not know that. Was it orange, black, and white? Was the building painted like the
bottom? I believe so. Awesome.
It was not, but it was right next to Nestle's headquarters. Nestle apparently owns Stouffer's. And it was these two kind of white buildings. And I thought it was their corporate offices, but I did some research and I think that's it. I think that's where they make the French bread. I think that's where they produce it all.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, lucky you guys.
Yeah,
huh?
Local.
Look at that. I mean.
Yeah.
Here I am growing up in Washington, D.C., right by the, you know, the Lincoln Memorial and Capitol Building, and you've got the Stouffer's factory.
So, you know, there's pros and cons to where you live, and some we're all.
I would have traded places with you in an instant.
Well,
young me.
It's no big whoop.
Young me.
Now,
they have pretty good distribution, so I'm sure you got it out there.
Yeah.
what were some of your favorites?
Well, that was the thing, is that Stouffer's was my food.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned before, my parents were separated. I was punk. My mother was not, she was wonderful, but the high on her priority was not worrying about what I'm doing or whether I'm fed or if I'm home. Or, I mean, this is, are you talking to somebody who at 15, I just went on tour.
Right,
I just left high
right.
school, went on tour, out to Ohio. And, you know, and it's like, I would say that I was a permissive household.
Okay.
And I was a self-feeder, and it was Stouffer's, and that's what we had in the house. So here I am, I'm 15, and I'm a big, the French bread pizza, of course, is the core, is the foundation that we build our Stouffer's obsession
right.
with.
Yes.
But then there's the mac and cheese as an entree. That was huge in the house. Mac and cheese. And mom would join in sometimes. It's not just sad me by myself.
Right.
You know?
And we've got.
I mean, sometimes a member of Minor Threat might stop in for some turkey tetrazzini.
That's.
Oh my gosh.
That rocks.
Because we had plenty. We were Stouffer's people. I think it's funny that one of my favorites was Welsh rarebit, which was just a cheese sauce. Welsh rare. I mean, like, talk about, you know, this anglophilic, you know, punk kid. Like, do you have Welsh rarebit? Yeah, I really. It's delicious on toast. Like, we never even had the toast. It was this bizarro offshoot Stouffer's side dish that my mom just kept buying.
Wow.
And
I didn't even know
it was
about
a bag
that
of
one.
Cheese. It might have been a boiling bag, but of course, it, you know, dovetailing nicely with the Stouffer's. I believe we owned the first microwave in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
That was the size of an apartment block. And, you know, I'm still probably suffering the effects of the tap-in, you know, micro ranger or whatever it was. And then we were, there was the Swedish meatball.
Right.
We're big. Pre-IKEA.
Pre-IKEA. Yeah. People think IKEA made them famous. Sorry, you bozos, it's Stouffer's.
Right. And Stouffer's had the decency to include like an egg noodle with their Swedish meatball.
Right.
So that really tied it all together.
Of course.
But yeah, that was the food, and the drink was Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
I don't think I drank water until I was 22 or 23 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
and that was on doctor's orders.
Were you microwaving these or were you using the oven? Because I think the thing about the Stouffer stuff was it would take like 7 hours in the oven to make these things.
Well, I think it was either or.
Okay.
It depends. Like, is this dinner? Are you having dinner with mom, and is it nighttime?
Right.
Why don't we just put it in the oven and get a little crust on top of
right.
it?
Sure. Right. You're going to get a better
tetrazzini.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I know that everything went in the microwave eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you're on the go. And we weren't monsters. We didn't microwave the French bread piece.
That's important. Right. Yeah.
Even though we had the microwave with the browning element that never worked, that caused the fuse to pop, still, we respected the French
bread
pizza.
Well, it seems like if you microwave the French bread pizza, it wouldn't, the bread wouldn't get so hard that it would almost break your teeth. Every time you would bite into it. I don't know if you remember that element.
I do. Look, I had one of those. I think the first time I had COVID, because when I get sick, I go immediately back to like, I would like some Pepperidge Farm white bread.
Yes, I do too, actually. I want stuff. Yeah.
Do you have any Kraft singles? Like stuff that, you know, and I know that my wife showed up with French bread pizzas because I've had them in recent memory, you know, in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hurt your teeth.
That's very sweet that she did that. And yeah, they hurt your teeth. A lot of this stuff, Stouffer's obviously still exists, and a lot of this stuff still exists. And it's really funny. It's really funny looking at the website. Like we were looking at the French bread pizza aside, the mac and cheese and the other entrees and stuff come in different sizes, which are party size, family size, and meals for one. I know. That's what Jonah and I were like, this feels sad. But they describe it like this, the meals for one. Delicious bites for solo nights. After a long day, you deserve to treat yourself with a quick and comforting meal, like our ultimate five cheese mac or bowl fulls fried chicken and mashed potatoes. Find your favorite and explore all our meals for one. I know the meals for one thing absolutely devastated
us. I think delicious bites for solo nights is like, ooh.
Yeah. And then family size, their motto is feed the family, and party size, it's bigger portions for bigger plans. But this is also something that we found funny. The mac and cheese also has one additional size that's only for the mac and cheese, called large size. For someone who's like, I don't want to just have a meal for one of mac and cheese. If I'm going mac and cheese, I'm going hard, which is what I would do.
One's not enough.
Yeah, one's not enough.
Try one and a half.
Yeah.
You won't leave any.
I don't really remember the meals for one, but I do, or maybe I do, but I really remember being at people's houses and them having the party size of Stouffer's stuff and being like, whoa, what the hell is this?
Rich. Wow. I remember the Big Mac and cheese, but I'm from a slightly different era. I mean, I predate Lean Cuisine, just to put some perspective on this. Like I was in Stouffer's prior to the Lean Cuisine revolution, which changed it all for everybody.
Right.
Yeah. We didn't have fancy sizes, but they did have the things that were sides in and of themselves. I think that they did have the larger ones.
Right.
Yeah. I guess my mom was never tempted, you know. And think of the economy. We could have split the mac and cheese.
I mean, can you imagine anything more fun than opening up your freezer and there's a party size of Stouffer's mac and cheese? I'd be like, it must be my birthday or something. It seems so fun. And yet I'm sure if you always had it, you would get sick of it very quickly. Or maybe not. It's pretty delicious.
I don't think I cared about food. I think it was more of a fuel thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to describe. I can't project me now to that. Because this is stuff I just would never eat.
I've always wanted to be that way of like food is fuel, but I'm always like, when can I get more of it? And I'm and I love it.
Well, this will be a lifelong battle.
Yes, 100%.
So Brian, I actually went to, I had a friend in middle school whose dad worked for Nestle.
Yes.
And we got to go to, I believe, a Cleveland Guardians or
Cleveland
Browns game.
A Cleveland Browns
baseball
game.
Baseball or football game.
Okay.
Yeah, Browns game. And we had Nestle had a loge for this sports game. And it was full of Nestle products.
Oh my God.
And like, I remember just eating, like popping these like mini Nestle Crunch bars. Just, I don't remember what sport it was, but I just remember eating so much Nestle Crunch and hot chocolate. I mean, were you into chocolate? What were some of your kind of desserts you were into?
You know, it's funny. I wasn't a chocolate person. I am now. I'm a dark chocolate lunatic now.
Same.
But I wasn't into bar chocolate, really. I was not a Hershey Nestle guy. What I was into was Hostess.
Okay.
Cakes, pies. That was it. The Hostess Big Wheel, which is what they were called in my region. You may know them as a Ding Dong, or if you're one of our friends in Canada, a King Don. You know, old King Don Bouchard up there in Manitoba.
Okay.
the hockey puck that's dipped in chocolate with a,
right.
It's like a, you know, a cylindrical ho-ho. Kind of. It's like it's a hockey puck with cream in the middle and it's dipped in chocolate. These things, we got them in 12 packs and the 12 pack was in the refrigerator, not beer.
Okay.
Big wheels. Okay. Because my mom was like, she liked them chilled and, you know, she was in on this too.
Right.
We were not, you know, it wasn't all my idea. So you would get these big wheel ding dong things, you'd open them up and then you'd just eat the chocolate off. And then you'd have round two, which is you go and attack the cupcake, let's call it.
Fun.
The hockey puck cupcake and take that out separately. And so that chocolate I was fine with.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe proximity to the cake. I don't know. Maybe because it was thin. It wasn't so much of a chocolate commitment. And I love ho-hos too.
Yeah.
Ho-hos.
Those
yes.
are so good. Can I say something without offending either of you, which is that
I don't know.
Which is that being into dark chocolate, I don't think today, even though you're both into dark chocolate, it doesn't really make you a chocoholic. And I'm not saying that you claim to be, but I think chocoholics like myself are more into milk chocolate because that's more I'm not going to spend too long on this because I can see from both of your faces that you're not really enjoying it. But It's a true chocoholic, I think, is obsessed with milk chocolate. And that's controversial. I'm probably going to get a lot of feedback on this. A lot of
negative feedback. I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vanessa, let me just ask you a question. What's your bar count? What's your daily bar count with
your chocolate bars? That's fair. Yeah. That's pretty low. And I bet yours is pretty high.
Yeah, yeah, I can easily be a 2-bar-a-day guy. Just
okay.
Like your utility chocolate, your Choco Love.
Okay.
You know, just a nice little $3, you know, jammer in there that you have to go to the other store for.
Okay.
I will knock two of those out in a day. And that makes me a chocoholic.
Okay.
And I know a lot about aholicking. And this one's real.
Okay. Okay. I take it back.
And with the dark chocolate, you're getting a lot less sugar. So you can eat more of it and not get as sugared out.
I think so. And I believe that it's got I keep hearing that it's got a little go fast to it also, that there's, you know, some of it's caffeinated or.
Right.
Or,
there is caffeine, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I take it back. I'm sorry that I accused you both of not being chocoholics.
No, just as long as we're all enjoying chocolate, isn't that really what matters?
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Getting back to, now, speaking of controversy. Did you know that Stouffer's was sued no less than 3 times for absolutely hilarious reasons? Do you want to get into the first? Jonah found this
sure.
first one, so I don't want to take it.
There
from.
Was they were sued by Applebee's over using the term skillet sensations.
Yeah.
Because Applebee's saying they coined the phrase in 1997. And Stouffer's came out with it right after for some frozen dinners. And there was this big lawsuit. They both wanted to use a name. Nestle eventually agreed to stop using the phrase Skillet Sensations in marketing and renamed it Stouffer's Skillets in 2005.
Wow. And they fight over a name like that. Like, no, we're Skillet Sensations. I'll fight you.
Yeah. Everybody Please. Fighting over Skillet Sensations, which doesn't seem like it's that good of a name, but also the Stouffer's being like, okay, you can have it. Now we're going to rename it Stouffer's Skillets is a little bit like, okay, you could have.
Yeah.
Worked a little harder.
Take that, Big Applebee.
Yeah. Now, another one that happened even prior to this in 1991, it's funny you brought up Lean Cuisine, is that the Federal Trade Commission issued a complaint that Stouffer's had misrepresented the sodium content in their Lean Cuisine entrees by stating that they were low in sodium because they weren't. And
they were not.
And they and Stouffer's... Stouffer's argued that the campaign had focused on good taste and controlled sodium, fat, and calories, and that the sodium claim was relative, reflecting a lower amount of sodium, not necessary that the entrees were low sodium. So I think they were like, it's lower than our other stuff, so everything's right. relative. But the Federal Trade Commission ruled in favor, or the judge ruled in favor of the Federal Trade Commission. And Jonah, do you want the last one, which happened in 2011, there was a recall placed on, again, Lean Cuisine, spaghetti and meatballs, after consumers reported finding pieces of plastic in their meals.
That's not meat. That's not what they paid for.
And so in 2016... Here's another one. So that was 2011. So that was a little bit of a recall. Another recall in 2016 when a number of Stouffer's products were voluntarily recalled on the suspicion that they contained small pieces of glass.
Mm. Well, they've gone upscale from the plastic, though.
Yeah. If we're gonna put some kind of non-edible material in here, it's gonna be nice.
Yeah, and the glass is slightly more dangerous, you might think. It really depends what kind of glass, really.
Right.
That's true.
Exactly.
Brian, what are your thoughts on like Little Debbie? Were you into like zebra cakes or stuff? No.
Whoa, that was quick.
No, Hostess. Hostess only. No, any rogue snack cake was absolutely unacceptable. And I have to say with the Hostess fruit pie, the cherry, specifically the fruit pie, that obsession carried through into my early 40s. This was a product that was on the rider for every Bad Religion show.
That's so awesome.
Woe is the runner who would show up with a counterfeit with something other than a Hostess cherry pie. Here's your Entenmann's. Get back to that store.
Did you tell him to go for a walk?
Of course, I had people do that.
Just FYI, every time I talk about going for a walk, I start singing that song. And Jonah says, Vanessa, it's not that funny the millionth time.
God, and that guitar solo is such a devil for me that I have to play that occasionally. It's a dumb solo and it's hard. But I digress. Yeah, no.
But do you think think about it. It got me to be able to do that bit for years. So it was worth it, right?
You know, I didn't let that breathe at all. I should have really let you have it. I was running over you trying to think of Entenmann's and Little Debbie.
No. I really snuck it in there and you caught it. So
yeah, tasty cake. That's what I was going. Tasty cake.
Tasty cake pie.
You hate
it. And you go right back to Lanham Severn, Maryland with that one.
Okay.
For their maid.
Okay. Okay.
You know, before we go to break, I got to say, there are some riffing solos on that record, the Greatest Record.
Thank you.
I'm thinking, I listened to it yesterday. It's Drunk Sincerity. I think maybe that one has
Yeah, that's a fun one. That's cool. We just started playing that again, actually, live, when you come see Bad Religion live this year.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Incredible. And also I wanted to promote, I got this Glennie Friedman Minor Threat book.
Cool. That's a great book.
Just a Minor Threat.
Because it's great because Glenn's such a great photographer that subject matter is still
there you are.
For discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to say I'm a huge Bad Religion fan too. And I don't mean to just talk about going for a walk, but really, I've gotten so much mileage out of that song. And I will continue to further.
Please. Please do. And hopefully our time together will add to it in some way.
That's right. Yeah. I have one more question before we go to a break too, which is, You were saying, Hostess, for a period of time, Jonah got very into the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle pies. Did you ever have, were those Hostess?
I don't think so.
They may have been.
They were out for a very limited amount of time, we think.
They had like custard inside of them or something.
Mm. This wasn't.
Yeah, I think I was out of pie.
Yeah.
Except for the cherry pies.
The cherry pies.
They were Hostess. They were filled with vanilla pudding and they were green. But this might have been, this was probably like early 90s.
Yum.
I know. I guess in retrospect, at that age, it would have been weird if you were like, oh, there's these delicious looking cherry ones, but I'm going to buy the disgusting looking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one. But Jonah really liked them. And I think
I wish those were on your rider. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, it would have been great. It would have been.
People have to go find them.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Brian Baker.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We're back and we'd like to play a game that's relatively new for us. And it's called Congratulations, You Baked Yourself.
Congratulations, you baked yourself.
So basically in this game, we will discuss three culinary dishes that are making a comeback in a nostalgic way. And the rules are sort of unclear, but we'll at the end of reading all three, we'll pick which one we're most excited about. And that will be the dish ultimately that we decide has baked itself. It's a play on congratulations you played yourself, except congratulations you baked yourself. And I think if I had explained it anymore, it's not going to make it sound less stupid. So let's get started.
Right. And realize I have no frame of reference for even what you're referring to. So this is going to be good fun for my son.
Great. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Jonah, do you want to read this first one?
Sure. So this first dish that apparently is making a comeback is classic macaroni salad with ham. Mm. And this is from Southern Living, all of these. And it says, are you looking for an easy, fuss-free recipe for a potluck? Give this macaroni salad with ham a try because you can't get much easier than a recipe with only two steps. So basically, there are salads and there are Southern salads. Not a lot of prep work. It's a layered salad. You just boil some pasta, stir in ham, vegetables, mayonnaise, and seasoning, then cover and chill for at least 2 hours. Brian, what do you think about a
horrifying? Okay. Just horrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Yeah. It's not, that's just not what I do.
Yeah.
Though, you know, I know that the ham is pre-sliced.
Right.
And it comes in a vacuum pack. And it's like, that's where it just all goes wrong for me.
Right.
Yeah.
What if it was Stouffer's salad with ham and you're like little Brian Baker? What do you think? Does this sound good to you or still no?
Well, now you're talking about hot ham and hot mayonnaise. And I don't even think little Brian Baker, because Stouffer's, I mean, by its nature, we are heating it. I don't really think it was right. There was not a line of
that's true.
Of cold Stouffer's.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I, I agree with Brian. I think it sounds pretty gross. I also think we the word salad is used very kind of liberally, I think. And
yeah, it's doing a lot of work, that word salad. Yeah. It's not good for you.
Yeah, not a lot of green stuff in this. No, Vanessa, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's tough for me. The idea of putting all of this stuff in so much mayonnaise, and then what kind of chilled me was when it says at the end, chill for at least 2 hours. It just feels like it all starts to congeal in a way that, is not not my style, I'll say.
Yeah.
So, not for me, but, on to the next.
Maybe for someone who enjoys Southern Living Magazine.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe be good for them.
Absolutely.
And speaking of which, the next one that's coming back is called Pineapple Fluff. Texture is the star of this fluff recipe. You get creamy, chewy, and crunchy in every tropical bite. So this is a sweet side dish. Okay. Side dish or dessert, you choose, that you can whip up with just 10 active minutes of prep time. And you use macadamia nuts, pineapple, and coconut to combine for flavors that are so tropical and just plain fun. Now, before they list the ingredients that you need to make this, Jonah made a comment, which it says, to make pineapple fluff, you'll need, and then Jonah wrote in parentheses, besides a total lack of dignity.
Yeah. You're going to have to put your dignity aside. You're going to have to ask what the active is 10 minutes of active work.
Yeah.
But how much dormant? How much dormancy?
How much dormant work?
Exactly.
Is it 2 hours? Is it a day?
Yeah. It's just, it's just canned crushed pineapple in juice, pineapple flavored gelatin, frozen whipped topping like Cool Whip, mini marshmallows, unsweetened shredded coconut, and macadamia nuts for the necessary crunch.
Apparently,
it tastes like fluffy, airy, light dessert.
Right. Well, it's a catastrophe, clearly. But also, it is being billed as a potential side dish.
Side dish. You're correct.
For what?
Yeah.
What would this pair well with?
Right.
Great question.
Don't know.
Maybe your ham and whatnot salad.
I think you may have just
your classic macaroni salad with ham goes with this pineapple fluff.
Yeah.
So that's
1 out of 10 would not eat.
Okay.
1 out of 10 would not eat. This feels like something like maybe you eat at vacation at like an amusement park or something.
Right.
But not something you would make at home.
Right. Yeah.
That's a vibe I get.
But maybe I didn't even know they make pineapple jello, but maybe it's because people making this pineapple fluff left and right.
I can believe I can believe in pineapple jello. That seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. Just not when it's mixed with a bunch of marshmallows and
Hawaiian Thanksgiving.
Right.
It's big. It's big on, kapa'a.
Right. Okay.
So let's get into this last one before we decide. This one's tomato soup cake.
Well, it's already win. That's it. That's a win.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, look what it has to fight against.
I know. It's not the toughest. This article says tomato soup isn't just a major conversation starter at a dinner party for its surprising ingredient. It's also beautiful to serve and delicious to eat with loads of warm spices similar to carrot cake. Your guests would never know there was tomato soup in the recipe, but you'll definitely want to tell them anyways because knowing is the fun part. Okay. We got to just talk about the way this article is written. The tone of this is so bizarre. It's like you want to like prank your friends, but also you're like super fool your guests, but also like this person feels like weirdly proud of it. It's a weird tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little aggressive, actually.
It's a little. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you resent your guests, or you have a. There's a lot of issues that have not been worked out, I think, in the author's case.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of like having someone eat something and then being like tell them like the unexpected ingredient afterwards or something. That feels weird.
Yeah, you're drinking decaf.
That's what I said to Jonah.
Yeah, it's the Farley skit.
That's exactly what I said to Jonah when we were talking about this. I was like, it reminds me so much of the Chris Farley sketch when he says.
I've had some great tomato cakes in my life. But
it's so funny. That's such
no
a
scenes,
funny
though.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like, yeah. Fuck you. You just had tomato, you idiot. Okay. So, but so this seems like sort of, it would be your pick though, Brian. Like it feels.
The tomato cake, I could see that being, I could see it made with less chemicals.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm kind of interested in the use of tomato, you know, in a fruit format because, yeah. You know, someone could chime in here who's better with vegetables, but isn't tomato sort of on that dividing line?
I believe it is a fruit technically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, I'm more attracted to that.
Yeah.
It seems a little more rustic.
Yes.
Also, they haven't told us really what's in it yet, so this could all
yeah.
go pear-shaped.
Well, I can tell you what's in it. It's salt, sugar.
Love those.
Butter.
That too.
Eggs, vanilla extract, baking spray with flour, and golden raisins. And then you got to make a cream cheese frosting.
Oh, wait, Jonah, you left out the most important part. There's a can of...
can of condensed tomato soup, such as Campbell's. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of sugar and salt in there, too. Yeah, I mean, still, I have no problem with any of this.
Yeah.
8 out of 10.
Okay.
Woody.
Fair enough. I wonder what the color would be like of this. Like, I wonder if you're going to be seeing red when you make it or if
I
it'll
think
be
you are. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Now, that reminds me of a song on the first Minor Threat record called Seeing Red. And it was interesting because we, of course, the straight edge kids, we lived on tomato cake, Coca-Cola, and Hostess. you know, Ian MacKay made the best tomato cake in Northwest Washington. I'm going to call him now. Hold on.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested in this. They say it tastes a lot like carrot cake. It has a cream cheese frosting. I go, where do I sign? You know, I'm definitely.
You have to sign for it.
You have to sign for it. It has cinnamon, nutmeg, cardamom, and allspice in it too. This sounds very good to me. And I will say, I was just at a restaurant recently, and I had this like tomato toast where the tomato on it was really sweet. And I thought, I think we're really missing the boat here that we're not using tomato as a dessert more often.
Yeah, you know? I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah, I like it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Brian, if you had to vote to bring back one of these items, and just to recap, it's a classic macaroni salad with ham, pineapple fluff, and tomato soup cake. Which one are you voting for?
I'm going to go with the tomato soup cake, John.
Okay.
Yeah.
Vanessa?
Yeah, I'm going straight to that tomato soup cake too. In fact, I genuinely might try and make this. I don't know when, and I don't know how, and I don't know where, and I do know that I probably never will, but I it appeals to me.
All right. Yeah. And same here. I think it sounds like the most edible, and yeah.
Well, it's not crazy.
Right.
It's not crazy.
It's not just horrifying. It's fine. Yeah. It could work. It could not work. You just move on to the next thing.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on. What do you have coming up? I know we just saw Bad Religion's playing No Values. That's very exciting.
Yeah, I just found that out today that we're playing I just the punkest of Enormo punk fests in Pomona, California with the Misfits and our friend Social Distortion, who we will be touring the U.S. with prior to that. There's a big Bad Religion Social Distortion trek across the U.S. We're co-headlining, you know, flip-flopping, basically drawing straws to see who gets to go home first. I'm sorry, I meant we're co-headlining. I'm really, really looking forward to this trip. We're going to be all over the U.S. and we test drove this in Australia a year ago, doing some shows with Social Distortion, and we got along just like houses on fire. So it's going to be a good show.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that. And then I have I have a month in Europe on the festival circuit, as one does in Bad Religion. I will be right now. I believe I'm going to be in Europe again in November with my band Fake Names, which features Brandon from Fugazi, who I'm sure you're familiar with, and our friend Johnny Temple from Girls Against Boys, who's very handsome. Members of SOA and the Faith. It's a celebration of the DC high school system, where all the guys from different bands, we've made our own band called Fake Names.
Yes.
With a singer from Refused is the one who does all the heavy lifting. But
yes. And Expendables, incredible. I did the bio for that actually for Epitaph.
I think that's when we met.
I think so. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And yeah, so great record. And yeah, just remember, you and Social Distortion must have crossed paths during that whole Another State of Mind, that era,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, their vehicle broke down in front of our house. So wow. You know, that's how you get to know somebody when they yeah. can't get away.
Wow. And what that must have been, what, like 85 or something?
No, that was 82 or 83 at the very latest. I think it might have been 82.
Oh my gosh. Long time ago. Incredible.
And you're doing a lot of touring dates, and you're telling me there's going to be Hostess cherry pies on all of these at all of these venues.
Well, now there will be, now that we've resurrected this tradition, and we're going to play a walk every night, and I'm going to think about the Bears.
Wow.
As I launch into that awkward yet uplifting solo that I foolishly wrote myself, not knowing I would have to reproduce it thousands of times.
We feel honored, and also, you know, hopefully we can see you when you're in our respective cities, and you know, we'll come backstage and grab a cherry pie. That's not why we're going. Okay. We're going to see you, but you know, we'll just, should it be there, you know, I guess.
Right. If I can't find it, don't blame the runner.
Right.
Just realize that I've been visited by friends. Yeah, of course. We'd love to see you. You know, if you have any other dietary needs, let us know in advance. Yeah. We have a crack staff.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. But well, it's really awesome. We're both such big fans of yours, and it. Thank you so much for doing this. It was really cool to get to talk to you, and you know,
I've had a great time. And when I've listened to a few others of these, and I just love it. It's great. It's got this kind of like hardcore delicious dish vibe, but it's and then the sibling thing. Your energy's off the charts.
Aww.
You guys, you should keep at it. Keep at it.
That's very nice.
Thank you, Brian.
I'm
going
to go
walk
to our
that.
Parents and tell them that.
Yeah,
that you said that. But they'll listen to.
All right. If you enjoyed that, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones like Stouffer's frozen dinners.
Yeah.
Hostess snacks. Yeah. All of it. Right?
All of it.
Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.